special voices, and accents. Welcome to the Midwest Radio Theater Workshop's Technical Assistance Best Of Series. You'll be hearing the voices, thoughts, and performances of some of our favorite workshop trainers and friends. This isn't everything they said or meant to say, but it is a good place to start. The human voice is radio's bread and butter. Your voice provides the listener with immediate information. From just a short phrase, the listener will know your character's age, educational background, and origins. Now, a very specific voice or accent can put the listener in a very specific place or time or mood. A good, practiced impression or dialect in the right situation is like a wonderful shortcut. Your character doesn't have to waste a word explaining himself. He can just step right in and tell the story.
You know, George, it took me about 10 minutes after I got into radio to find out that people would believe anything I told them. I'd just make up a real clear picture in my mind of what I thought it looked like out in the stadium, and I'd squinch up my eyes and tell the listeners whatever I saw. You know, the leaden skies threaten overhead today as the Red Sox huddle in the dugout.
Yes.
Harvey squints at second base and begins the windup. I made it up, and they loved it. The sponsors loved it, too.
Well, it's because you're sincere, Ronnie.
Well, you know,
believe what you say. Even if it's utterly a figment of your imagination.
That's right, George.
It's a very, very powerful tool.
Well, that's how radio works, George.
Government, too, I should think.
Well, say, that's a thought.
Do you know I substituted for Betty Astor?
That was Richard Fish and David Osman in Osman's Ronald Reagan murder case from the George Tirebiter story. Now, Rich will introduce us to our own voices and all their possibilities.
When you do work as a voice actor, you are generally called upon to perform in one of three categories. The first is essentially your own voice. That is most of the work you get in the commercial field. You are asked most of the time to be in the thing because you are the type they want, and they want you to play a character but do it as you would do it in your own voice. The second category is character voices. This includes foreign accents, generalized ones, and playing older or younger or something like that. And the third category is impressions, which is taking your voice to imitate a specific person.
Here, Eric Weil and Gene Pollitt help Richard prove that we all have a few character voices inside us.
Everybody has got one voice. There's one voice that everybody seems to have, and that's Goofy, the dumb voice.
Oh, yeah, you know, him was sort of like this, Mortimer Snurd, you know.
Down in there. Everybody has some kind of a voice like that, and I think I would like to prove that. Eric, you are sitting right there in front of me. Come on up here. Do you do voices in general? Do you do different ones? Well, that's what you think. You do now. First of all, your normal voice. Say, read us something off the cuff in your normal voice.
Oh, east is east and west is west, and never the twain shall meet.
Okay. A good voice, fairly deep, relatively speaking, and well articulated. Now, Goofy.
Oh, east is east and west is west, and never the twain shall meet.
Okay, what you've done there is a regional accent. There are political implications. Now, do you do on-air voice work and so forth?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you do various voices or dialects or anything like that?
No.
Well, let's see what you really can do. First of all, how about a brief sentence, the 47 years ago sort of standard copy in your regular voice.
Can I use what I use on there?
Sure.
Okay. This is Gene Pollitt from KWRS, KMUW, saying, let's talk it over.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good voice, and like most radio people, a fairly standard accent of not particularly regional, very slight sort of a Midwestern range in the vowels, but it's, as a radio person, it's pretty standard. Now, how about somebody who's young? How about a little girl? Little girl.
My name's Jean.
How old are you, Jean?
3 and a half.
3 and a half? Mm-hmm. Do you go to school yet, Jean?
No.
And do you live with your mommy and daddy?
Mm-hmm. And my crazy little brother.
And your little brother. What's your little brother's name?
David.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Bergman and David Ossman add these thoughts on the discovery and development of character voices.
Now, I noticed here again, one's own voice is funny. If you do want to develop the first funny voice you have, listen to yourself on tape and mimic yourself. It's not an easy thing to do.
Put no restrictions on what you do. If you do it well and convincingly, and even if it's just a step away from your own voice, which many of our best characters are just that step away. They're just a little smarter, or a little dumber, or a little fair, or a little slower.
Okay, we know about our regular voices, and we know that those characters inside us are just a step away. So, let's get specific. Here Rich explains how he becomes older and younger.
You may be doing a variation in age. For instance, if I want to do an older voice, well, one of the things I do that I might do is to take it back and not be quite as strong-voiced and be a little bit more shaky in my tones. And also the older character will breathe more shallowly and more often. I find that a lot with older people. And sometimes I'll take the pitch up a little bit. It depends on what age you're going to play. Doing a younger voice is generally harder than doing an older voice. You might go up in pitch. Gosh, if I wanted to do a young kid, I might take my voice up like this or something like that. To play across puberty is, of course, the hardest thing of all, and I'm not sure I can actually do that. Gee whiz, it's actually better sometimes to get a woman to play a young boy if you have to play across puberty lines than to try and get a guy to do it, because you go up in your falsetto voice, "Hello, hi there," and that's Mickey Mouse. You know, that doesn't sound like a kid at all.
Here, Lindsay Ellison talks about her technique for playing the 8-year-old Oliver in Douglas Soderbergh's film At 11, directed by Marjorie Van Holtern.
Remembering the child in myself, and for doing the voice of Oliver, I happen to have a son, so I was imagining my son and how he speaks to me. And the voice can't be turned on or into anything unless there is that emotion or that breath to back it. So what I would do is I would imagine my son speaking to me, and I feel as though I kind of get a look in my eyes as I see how my son is seeing, then the voice almost comes out by itself. The voice is a tool, but the tool is no good unless you know how to use it. And for me, using it is finding the emotion and the experience and relating in a human way. So doing a child is just realizing, well, we all have a child in us, and gosh, what was it like being a child, and how would it be to be an 8-year-old child? I think there's more emotion involved with it. So the difference between the technique and the emotion was the difference between doing kind of a silly voice and an emotive or dramatic voice.
In this cut from Film at 11, you'll also be hearing the voice of Courtney Daniel.
Are you sure you don't know what that word means? The one you shouted during high mass?
What word?
Eat your gruel, honey.
Does Dad pray for me?
I suspect so.
Is he moody this morning?
You know how he gets on the days he has an assignment.
No one else at school has a dad.
Have you been discussing your father's job?
Well, only that he only works for the government.
Don't. Besides, that's not exactly accurate.
Well, what does he do?
It's hard to explain.
Is it the CIA? Is the FBI?
If anyone asks, just say he works for the MYOB.
Mind your own
beeswax. Business.
It's a good job, right?
It's not for me to decide.
Does he like it?
In the end...
Does he love it?
Men in America don't love their jobs. They just do them.
Does he love us?
Yes.
Do we love him?
Oh, Oliver, honey, you're asking too many... If I put some chocolate chips in there, will you eat it then?
Now Rich will discuss American dialects and accents. As you listen, try to think of the different speech patterns and cadences you hear every day. Which ones are local? Which ones are from 1,000 miles away? What do they make you think of? Then try to mimic a few.
If you want to specifically pick up a character or an accent or a dialect, you should try and listen to as much of it as possible. Now, I grew up in New Jersey, right near in New York City, and I did not live in the part of New Jersey that's famous for the Jersey accent. You know, Jersey, sort of down in here, which melds into New York, and I take the bite over on 33rd Street there, you know, it's that sort of thing. I heard that growing up, but where I live, they didn't speak like that. And I couldn't have done the sort of Midwestern accents until after I'd lived in the Midwest for a while. Now, I live down in southern Indiana, you know, and they got the sort of the southern accent. It's not really southern accent down there. Indiana accent sort of kind of where the Midwest, you know, comes down and bumps into the south there. It's coming up through Tennessee and Kentucky. These things, I pick them up just by being around them, listening to them.
Let's move on to English accents.
Sometimes you're called upon to talk like an Englishman. So, you know, there's different sorts of English accents when one does it. Of course, the English believe that they don't have an accent at all. It's you Americans that have one. But there is the educated Englishman who talks like this. And there's the Cockney or the lower-class working Englishman who talks like this. And that gets right down to Australian, you know, strain. And that's because they mostly came from the lower classes.
Now, here's something for all you Anglophiles. Listen carefully as Mark Decker and Vanessa Whitburn take us on a delightful tour of their country and accents. Be sure to listen to not only what they say, but how they say it.
Mark, can I get you to come up here and give me some help on this one?
I doubt it.
How many distinct dialects do you find in the British Isles, do you know?
Very difficult to answer. I mean, the British Isles covers a vast region from down south. It depends on whether you're south-east or south-west. Then there's the Midlands, and the Midlands goes from East Anglia right the way through what we call the Black Country, which is virtually unintelligible, right the way across to Wales and the Welsh voice. Very, very lilting, very musical. They think they can sing. Other people think they're different things. Then you go further north, and then it depends on whether you're on the east side or the west side. So you've got Manchester on the west and Sheffield, that sort of thing, Yorkshire. And you damn get the two mixed up, because Yorkshire has created England. I mean, England wouldn't be anything without Yorkshire. So, and then you go further north, and you come to Newcastle, and that, again, Geordie dialect, but as we know it, unintelligible. I mean, I can't say what word they say. And then you go further north, and you go into Scotland, and I know nothing about Scotland, but there's lots of different dialects in Scotland.
Highlands,
yeah, the Outer Isles, the Western Isles. The whole thing.
Now, what are the major differences when you move from dialect to dialect? Is it a vowel shift?
Yes, it's a vowel shift. It's a total difference between whether it's a musical dialect or whether it's a completely flat dialect. You get.
Give me an example.
Oh,
of it.
You can you say this?
Yes.
Well, my voice, I'm told, is a London accent. I come from a place called Essex in England, which is about 40 miles outside of London. Now I'm going to try and think of another accent to do. Can you think of anything I can do, Vanessa?
It's a bit of Blummy.
Blummy?
You know,
oh,
we all have to think about that the whole time.
That's right, they talk about that the whole time.
Yeah.
Blummy, you know, down Brum, where I come from, and you goo to the shops, and you have some cheeps, you see, and biscuits, and that sort of thing.
It's all up in the air, you know. I mean, you just go on and on. It's really boring.
Yeah. Scouse, what's scouse?
Oh, my God.
Can you do scouse?
I can give you a sentence in Devon, which is dialect, rich dialect. Where be you too, my dear? Now that means, where are you, my dear? Where be you to, my dear? Where be you to, my dear? Us be here bin us. We are here, aren't we? Us be here bin us. That's real rich Devonshire dialect, which is different to a slight regional accent or dialect.
So it's not only in the sound of the words and the vowel shift,
right,
but the grammatical construction change.
It's bad grammar, or shall we say loose grammar, if you're being polite. And it's also just a sort of a slackness of speech, a way in which people start, I mean, us been here is a mixture of just words which people are speaking to each other having not read. I mean, my grandfather can hardly read, so he would say us been here quite happily because he's never read anything that's told him that us been here is not not work?
It's difficult for me to do Cockney, actually, because I come from that sort of area, and it's very difficult for me to make that very sudden shift. I come from about 30 miles from where Cockney, real Cockney, is based, and I find it very difficult. People tell me that I've got a very Cockney accent in England, and so I find it difficult to do that shift into Cockney.
And yet it's not quite...
Stone the crows, mate, you know, it's that sort of thing.
And it's also sort of up in air, then.
Yeah, yeah.
And
there's a lot of rhyming in it.
And there's word patterns, again, also, that specific to Cockney, things, these rhyming slang things.
Yeah. Going down the apples and pears, you know, stairs. Apples and pears, stairs.
Brahms and Liszt.
Brahms and Liszt. You can explain Brahms and Liszt. you can work out Brahms and Liszt.
So, doing the Old English accent is a little more complicated than it would first appear. Shelley Carlson adds this advice.
And I can't tell you how many times people come in and go, oh, I do a great British accent, and then they do this horrible accent. You know, it's like... Well, how are you doing? And it's like, that's not a British accent. They think it is. They really do. And, I mean, you have to be clean about that. You know, don't be a slob about language, especially in radio drama.
Now, Rich Fish gives us some hints on foreign accents. There are times when you'll need more than just a good ear.
A lot of doing foreign accents is having some knowledge of the basics of pronunciation in that language. And another hunk of it is the national attitude. Now, for our purposes here in a limited time, I just want to talk about stereotypes. And, of course, you can get much farther into the thing and produce much more dramatic realism when that's appropriate. But stereotypes are very often used because sometimes in radio, in drama, you need to get right in there and let the audience know exactly what you're doing. And a stereotype is instantly identifiable or recognizable. And sometimes they're used for comic or satiric sorts of things. French people tend to look down their not inconsiderable noses at the world. And you have to do a French accent with an overtone of disdain. And, you know, if it is not French, it is shit, eh? Now, Italians are very animated. Yes, it is very exciting to be an Italian. You have to get very excited and interested in what you do, eh? You have to learn something about the national attitude toward the world. The German word is Weltanschauung. One of those beautiful words of meaning the view of the world. One thing that's sometimes helpful is language lab courses on tape, which you can get mail order or maybe running at your local high school or college. Lesson one of every language lab thing is pronunciation, how different vowels and consonants are done. If you want to work up an accent that you really don't know, one thing to do is go to lesson number one of any on-tape language lab course.
Let's spend a little time on the development of your accent. Do your homework and use all the resources you can. Libraries, language tapes, the movies, whatever works. Pay attention to both the sounds and the rhythms. And if you can, go to the source and practice, practice, practice. Shelley Carlson.
If you know someone, I mean, this is the easiest way in a sense, if you know someone who's good at it, just trot on over there with your little tape recorder and have them read a number of sentences for you. If you've got the script, then have them read another number of sentences for you from the script. If you don't have the script, look up in any general phonetic book, or you can make up your own sentences and make up a sentence for each vowel sound. So that, let's say, you make up a sentence, able and gaily we sail away, right, for the long A sound, and you get that person to put, if you don't have the script, put on the long A sound on the tape recorder on with the dialect in that sentence, so that if it's a southern accent, it would be, able and gaily we sail away, right, so that you understand what the difference is on the vowel sound, because accents, the difference is in the vowel sound, basically, and a few consonants, but it's basically the vowels, and then, because if you don't have the script, then you can apply how that vowel sound is changed in your script than when you get the script. And you just do that for each vowel. So you make up a sentence for each vowel sound. I can find the time to write it if I try, right, for the long I sound. So you just make that up and get somebody to put it on the tape recorder for you. And then indeed, as you're learning it, tape record yourself. Or listen to yourself very carefully. Now, I've developed a habit myself of listening to myself very carefully, but if you know that you don't listen to yourself carefully enough, then put it on the tape recorder and just use it as a work tape. And do, you know, a million times, able and gaily we sail away, right? That's indeed what you need to do. Stick things up on your you know, as an actor, stick it up around the house and make a point to have a two-minute conversation with yourself every hour in the accent that you're trying to be able to get.
Radio is, after all, an electronic medium, so use those resources to your advantage to work on your voices. Rich Fish.
I might take a recording of the person involved, of the voice involved, and break it up on a tape recorder, take, say, five or six sentences, and put leader in between them, or blank tape in between them, so that there would be a sentence and a pause and a sentence and a pause. And it's a little like a language lab. And you just repeat in the pauses what the person has just said and go back over it and over it and over it and over it. Another note, your voice always sounds different to you than it sounds to everybody else, including microphones, because part of the time you're hearing your voice partly through bone conduction inside your head, and this changes the frequencies and the overtones. So if you want to really get an accurate picture of what your voice is doing, you have to record it on tape somewhere and listen back. You cannot hear your own voice accurately inside your head while you're talking. You can get pretty close, and the more you do it, the closer you learn to be. But for accuracy, you must do exercises with a recorder and hear the playback.
Another note, don't overdo your voices or accents. Relax with your radio characters. Understatement always seems more effective than overstatement. David Osman offers this approach as well.
You know, there's a wonderful piece that Bob and Ray do, who are very skilled.
They're fabulous with voices.
They really created the idea of doing, so far as I'm concerned, of doing media voice humor, that is, putting on the sound of people on the radio. Ollie Ballou here. He was the first person to ever realize that microphones go on a little bit late. And, hey, it'll make, no matter who does it, it'll make other people laugh forever because it's funny, because it's insightful. And so that's another way of using these kinds of so-called funny voices, is by recreating the situations that you hear in technical terms.
Zones! The Zombie Queen!
No, don't do that. Just flip the tape.